What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Not once, but twice now, the Oakland City Council has rejected police commissioners Omar Farmer and Roberto Acosta, despite them being unanimously approved by the selection panel, which is sort of how this is supposed to work, sparking outrage from some members of the Oakland community and upset about what appears to be council overreach and perhaps interference by the Oakland Police Officers Association. Joining us to discuss are Omar Farmer, the outgoing alternate commissioner on the Oakland Police Commission. Good morning, Omar.
Good morning, Kat. Thank you for having me again.
Thanks for coming back to the show. And we're also joined by Millie Cleveland, who is on the steering committee for the Coalition of Police Accountability. Good morning, Millie.
Good morning. How you doing?
You know, probably same as you, one breath at a time. As if we didn't have enough at the federal level. Here we are. Yeah. Omar, as I told you the last time you were on the show, if I ask you something you don't want to answer, you just tell me. You go as far as you want to go or not. I did want to address the fact, though, that you and Roberto came on the show after the first rejection, and you received some pushback for coming on the show, but you're here again. Talk about your decision to continue speaking out.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for the invitation. And to be clear, I'm here speaking on behalf of myself in an individual capacity, not on behalf of the commission. I speak out about this because it's about the integrity of our independent, community-driven police commission selection panel process, and interference with that is inappropriate. We're here to hold OPD accountable. The reports about OPOA campaigning against me specifically, it's not appropriate. You know, the last three remaining tasks that they're supposed to resolve to get out from under the NSA have to do with self-governance and their inability to do that, and their weaponization of the reappointment process to, you know, so to speak, just goes to show how these cultural issues still exist, how they're trying to tamper with who has oversight over them. So, you know, my intent here is just to shine a light on this, to make sure things like this don't happen to future candidates, future applicants, and to try to get the integrity of our process back under the community's control again. Another thing that the commission is charged with doing is building trust between OPD and the community. But, you know, doing things like this create animosity instead. So that's why I'm here.
Millie, you're on the steering committee for the Coalition of Police Accountability. That is the organization that led the charge to establish a police commission, not once but twice. Voters, you know, we passed it once, and then we said it's not strong enough, and then we passed it, you know, a stronger version. So this is twice this has gone before the people of Oakland. I'm giving people some context, but also, like, you're an expert about how this stuff is supposed to move. Can you explain to the listeners what the selection process is supposed to look like? On what basis Ken Houston and Kevin Jenkins intervened, and how does that violate what's actually supposed to happen?
Well, the selection panel was composed of community members who are responsible for reviewing the applicants for the police commission, also doing, who work with staff to conduct outreach to get applicants for the police commission. And they're supposed to select people who are from demographics that are most vulnerable to police misconduct, from demographics of people who interact the most with Oakland Police Department. And on top of that, the council actually gets two bites of the apple. They get to appoint people to the selection panel, and then they get to vote on the recommendations when they come to council. So the selection panel is the community community participation for the identification of police commissioners that are then recommended to the council. Now, as far as Kevin and well, it has been reported that from that selection panelists were being pressured to reject their selection of Ricardo and Omar. They returned the nominations back to the selection panel, which was totally inappropriate. Kevin Jenkins had no authority to do that. And it seemed to us that the only reason he did that was because he got a letter that was written by Rajni Mandal, who is one of the strongest OPOA allies and writes for the Oakland Report, who had submitted a letter with a variety of accusations of misconduct by Omar Farmer. The selection panel reviewed that letter. They went through every video that every video of the panel meeting where alleged misconduct occurred, and they disputed all of it. They said none of it, none of the accusations had merit. And the attorney from the police commission wrote a letter back to the council saying none of these accusations have any merit. And so that's the type of pressure that they were getting from the council. And it seems to me that, and from many people, that Kevin Jenkins in particular was being pressured by OPOA to reject Ricardo and Omar.
My commentary, not my guess. I just point out it's election time. And a lot of times our city council members kowtow to the Oakland Police Officers Association to get their support. That has been ongoing through Jenkins' term. Again, my commentary, not my guess.
But I also want to raise that, you know, the mayor has been somewhat complicit in just siding with OPOA candidates. You know, she actually nominated a person that was knowledgeable about constitutional policing and then withdrew it, and then nominated two people that OPOA allies actually came to the council to advocate for. She also nominated someone to the selection panel who had been advocated for by OPOA allies for the police commission. He didn't get selected for the police commission, but she appointed him to the selection panel. So there's not only it's not only the council. I believe the city administration is making moves to actually weaken the police commission as well.
That is a piece of information I did not have. Thank you, Millie Cleveland. I mean, and this is not what this segment is about. There is a larger conversation asking where Mayor Barbara Lee has been in addressing not just this behavior right around the police commission, but the additional inappropriate behaviors that we've seen demonstrated by Ken Houston, his assault on the Oakland community, his poor behavior on the dais, accusations of violations of the Brown Act against Houston and Jenkins, and there's just sort of been silence from the mayor's office. So this perhaps sheds some light on that. Omar, talk sort of like bullet list, like what the powers of the police commission are, and then within that context, respond to the accusation that you have the ability to interfere in day-to-day policing that makes Oaklanders, this is air quotes, less safe.
No problem. But before we get to that, I just want to touch on something that Millie pointed out that I also wanted to point out in the beginning. Another reason for speaking out is because potential Brown Act violations have been conducted here behind closed doors. It's been reported how OPOA has admitted to campaigning against our reappointment slate. Not only that, it's also been reported that council members have had it, or at least a council member had a discussion with a police commissioner, or that police commissioner was told how Jenkins had put pressure on them to vote a certain way. I've also been told the same thing. So, you know, that is a potential Brown Act serial meeting violation. So this is information that the public is entitled to. These are deliberations that the public is entitled to. So that's another reason for speaking out. In terms of us having the ability to interfere with their day-to-day operations, there's no truth to that whatsoever. We have nothing to do with their day-to-day operations. We oversee the implementation of constitutional policing. We have policy oversight. We oversee, as I pointed out in the beginning, like police community relations. We have oversight over being able to make recommendations for mental health, like putting into place best practices for mental health, making recommendations on education and training. Those are the types of things that we have oversight for. We also, there's been a lot of talk about, the reason why I use weaponization in the beginning is because the chief of police, the previous chief, came before the police commission about a year ago and said that he felt like that, or I don't know, maybe his officers told him that they felt that the discipline process was being weaponized against them. And we barely have any involvement in the discipline process whatsoever. The only time the police commission gets involved is when there's a disagreement between the Internal Affairs Bureau and the Community Police Review Agency, and then we step in and make a decision. And that's a rare situation.
You and I share something in common around the departure of Police Chief Mitchell. We both got blamed for him leaving. I never even talked to the man. First police officer, police chief in 20 years, I literally never spoke to. But there Rosny was, saying it was all my fault. Council says, let me go back. So the first, you all were rejected the first time. The panel decides to put the two of you forth again. What happens at the second city council meeting, and what did council say was their justification this time?
Well, right. Oh, very good question. Millie, were you going to say something first?
Go ahead, Millie.
Well, I was going to say that the tragedy is that the council gave no justification for their vote. And that's the whole point of democracy. That's the whole point, that the council is supposed to have discussions in the public so that people understand the rationale behind their vote. What they did was they hid behind process and tried to focus the discussion on why they're how the selection panel selected people, why there were so few applicants, but none of them gave a reason for why they wanted to reject these candidates. And, you know, that's the lack of transparency is part of the problem here.
I've been really talking a lot about Houston and Jenkins, but I don't want to let the rest of council off the hook. Janani Ramachandran, Rowena Brown, and Charlene Wong in particular for this last round of votes. I want to play a clip from Janani right quick. Let's roll it, please.
I think that's the kind of thing we need to do. Respond to people who are qualified with life experiences, with whatever other kinds of backgrounds, and show that we're actually trying to recruit.
That is District 4 Oakland City Councilmember Janani Ramachandran. One of the things they said, accused the panel of, is not responding to applicants, not actually trying to recruit, not engaging in recruitment methods. True or false?
Well, first of all, anytime somebody is trying to hire somebody or recruit, just because somebody applies to something doesn't make them qualified. Also, and the selection panel had qualified incumbents. So when you have, it's just like when council runs, it's very hard to come up and run against an incumbent. The selection panel already identified Ricardo and Omar as the most qualified of the incumbents. So that had a lot to do with whether people really wanted to apply to, in fact, remove them. So on top of that, it's the staff's responsibility to conduct the outreach. It's not really the responsibility of the selection panel, who are volunteers. So if the council was really concerned about the selection panel the selection panel not doing adequate research, they would more properly fund the staff. On top of that, I think it was disingenuous for them to claim that they didn't know about the selection panel, because the selection panel has a very comprehensive manual. If they had competent staff, they would have had their staff review that manual, which would have informed them on the overall process. So they changed the conversation to talk about process and not talk about the merit or the pros and cons of the candidates.
At no time have they done that.
Right, right, right. One of the things that I thought, and your reflections on this, Omar, when they were talking about that, you know, not very many people applied to be on the police commission, in addition to what Millie just said, is, and this is across commissions, right? This is not the only commission that has been interfered with. I want to just be really clear about that. If you're an Oaklander and you're looking at the circus that has become the operations of the Oakland City Council, I'm like, why would I? I mean, I just, you know, my barometer for silly is really low, but I think that perhaps the toxicity that we're seeing on the dais and in the engagement with the commission, might that also be a reason why more people are not applying?
Absolutely. And if you were sitting at home, seeing this, thinking about getting involved, it may not inspire you to get involved, or it may only inspire a certain type of person to get involved, rather than having a diverse group of candidates.
Right. And it appears at this time, the only candidates that are being approved have to have been previously approved by OPOA allies. So we have a situation where we're trying to create an effective police commission, but the commissioners have to be approved by the police. We know the police can't oversee the police. So, you know, what are we really setting up here? The fox guarding the hen house? I don't think that's appropriate.
I mean, we know what we're setting up here, and that's a good segue to my next question, Millie, for you specifically. And Omar, you feel free to weigh in afterwards, because I want to talk about potential impact on the streets of Oakland. I want to talk about the people that are on the other side of OPD's violence or misconduct when it happens. And so as a lifelong Oaklander, someone who's lived through OPD's behavior for decades, who's watched the struggles in the streets to get to where we are, when you hear people like Chris Moore from Piedmont and Rodney Mondell, Xerox Experience in Public Safety, say, and the OPOA, say that Oakland has too much oversight.
Uh-huh.
And that's why there's crime, and that's why police are leaving. And the goal is to remove oversight, to lessen accountability. What comes up for you? What are your concerns?
Well, it just doesn't fit reality. I mean, there are people out there who are putting forth a narrative. They're saying that the police need to sort of be unleashed to do their job, and that they feel that oversight is getting in the way of police operations. And they can't, apprehend criminals because of oversight. But what they're forgetting is that tens of millions of dollars over the years resulting from police misconduct lawsuits has been paid out in Oakland. And that amount of money for lawsuits has actually really dwindled down. But if you weaken police oversight, then people feel like there's no place I can go to complain. Going to internal affairs is they're just going to ignore whatever my problem is, which is why we really need to strengthen the Community Police Review Agency. In fact, the city administration vowed over a year ago to set up a work group to make the transition from internal affairs to CIPRA. All those misconduct investigations should be done by CIPRA, and we need to eliminate police-run internal affairs. And in fact, what happened at the most recent case management meeting in front of the judge, John Burris, one of our lead plaintiffs, raised the concern that you can come up with all these policies, but what system do you have in place to assure that these policies are being put in practice? And so that's why it's very important for CIPRA to take over these investigations. But the council and the mayor have refused to move on that transitional plan. So, you know, I think to the people out there in the community, it would be in their best interest that we shut down internal affairs and let this CIPRA, which is composed of civilian investigators, do the misconduct investigations. And then people would have more trust.
Omar?
Yeah, I mean, what I hear when people say that, or what I fear for the people on the other side of OPD, as you pointed out, is that, you know, police brutality, getting in compliance with the NSA, you know, one of the aspects of that is use of force that has to do with police brutality, protecting people's constitutional rights has to do with the NSA getting in compliance with that. What I fear is that that stuff is going to roll back to how it was previously, put us back in the same situation that we were in, you know, in the 90s and before. The reason why progress has been made is because of oversight, not in spite of it. And the police commission is a fairly young organization, less than 10 years old. So I just, it's a really bad look. And there's no justification for less oversight. This is what people voted for. Respect the vote.
Right.
I'm glad you used that 10-year time frame, because I actually want to take us back 10 years. Right. You mentioned to what they were like in the 90s and before. In 2015, the Oakland Police Department murdered 11 black men with impunity. Mm-hmm. Demaria Hogg, Kenneth Perkins. I mean, right. So, and then, right, we had the Celeste Guap rape scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And that, right, that then ignited an inside out. So the push from the street supported the internal push for the police commission. So we're not even we're talking exactly 10 years. Right. Right. Where we went from 15 to, I think, in the last 10 years, three. I believe the number is three. And that's still three too many. But between the movement in the streets in partnership with the policy shifts, right, we've actually been able to see a dent. So when I talk about, I'm thinking about the people on the other side of OPD and their violence, I'm talking about just 10 years ago. And when I hear you, Millie, use words like unleash the police, that sounds exactly like what we're hearing from that orange dude at the federal government and what
exactly
we are seeing in Minneapolis and other places in the country.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, I also think a lot of focus is on the police commission because the public safety committee is not really doing their job. Right. You know, why isn't the safety committee, the council safety committee, focusing more on CIPRS conversion? Why didn't they fund the inspector general? Why aren't they talking about, why do we not have GPS in the patrol cars? Okay, why aren't they having hearings on overtime? What is the trend? I mean, this overtime of the police budget is creating a major deficit in our city. So we have the police, we have the public safety city council committee not taking up the legitimate issues that they should be taking up. And then that leaves the people to sort of focus on the police commission. I think they also focus on the police commission around a bunch of public safety issues because the police commission meets in the evening when working people can attend. Unlike Kevin Jenkins creating special meetings, moving this public safety meeting to 1:30 in the afternoon when a working person can't get there, decreasing the notification time when you have special meetings, it affects the sunshine ordinance requirements. So there's a lot that needs to go on with public safety, but it is not being taken care of. And they're trying to force the conversation to force the people to look at the police commission as this, that's the obstacle to the problems in the city, when in fact it's the council's public safety being negligent.
Omar, what happens next? What comes next?
Go
ahead, Omar.
I believe that's the selection panel has set up a set date when they're going to have meetings on the second Tuesday of every month, I believe. So hopefully this encourages people to come out and apply, you know, like-minded people, so we can have a diverse set of candidates. You know, we have to fight for the type of police commission that we want. I receive a lot of criticism from the OPD side because my campaign against the militarization of the police department, you know, and my fight against them to get more Bearcats and to stop the use of all types of militarized equipment. And, you know, people say that, you know, I'm not supporting them. You need to support them, give them the tools that they want. You know, their biggest lethal threat against officers is mental health. Their number one, it's not dying in the line of duty. The biggest lethal threat is suicide. It outpaces dying in the line of duty every day. So if you really want to fight for them and stand up for them and protect them, then ensure that they get best practices put in place to support their mental health. So in terms of what happens next, I'm going to continue to fight for those things as long as I'm there. And I hope that more people come out and apply so we get a diverse set of candidates now that you know what's going on.
And I think that I wanted to raise one other thing that, you know, we need to start talking about what are the directions that are being given to OPD regarding ICE. You know, Chief Beard did a TikTok, but I don't think the rank and file officers take directions from TikTok. You know, the mayor says that if ICE comes into town, that OPD is not to be involved. They shouldn't even be around. But under what conditions will they get involved? And we need more clarity on that. And I've heard from officers actually who who are concerned that they have fellow officers who are eager to work with ICE. We know there are a lot of officers in OPD that uphold white supremacist ideas already. So, you know, what are the rules around engaging with ICE? And that's something that the police commission could take up. And as far as moving forward, I would encourage people to contact their council person and tell them that they don't think that the police should have an influence on how police commissioners are selected. And if people don't know who their council person is, they can email council@oaklandca.gov, and that will go to all of the council members.
I'll just say really quickly, and then I've got to go. I've got Board Supervisor Nikki Fortunato-Best waiting to talk about ICE. I will say that I heard in a rare occasion when a police officer spoke directly to me that they told me directly they will not collude with ICE, but they will not warn the city that ICE is coming, and they will not stop ICE from disappearing our people. That came right out of a cop's mouth, a high-ranking member of OPD's mouth, to my face in a room full of people. So that's what they've told us they're going to do, and I tend to believe them when they say stuff like that.
Well, Chief Mitchell actually said that they do get notice when they come into town.
No, they did notice. They said they're not going to tell the city. They will know, but they are not going to share that information.
Well, I think that's something the Public Safety Committee should take up. They should demand to get reports, regular reports from the police chief on the activities of ICE in the city. They should demand that, and they should be demanding to verify the credentials of any ICE people that are arresting and kidnapping Oakland residents.
Thank you both so much for joining me this morning.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.